Recording. This is episode 2 of season 2.
Season 2, episode 2.
AKA episode 14.
It's amazing that we got through 12 episodes in season 1. That's just a lot bigger showing than I would have expected.
In retrospect, yeah, it seems like when you're doing it, you don't think we're going to spend 14 hours, essentially, of recording. They're a little over an hour, so I mean, just round up.
And I caught your math there. That's good. But my track record with things is I get really distracted really quick. So me doing anything 12 times in a row is kind of it's a win.
For sure. So, we are here with our second guest of the second season.
Thank you.
Her name is...
I say my name.
Her name is Carolina Montenegro, and we have some Southern Comfort eggnog.
Southern Comfort in the office today.
It does not have Southern Comfort in it.
No?
Southern Comfort makes it.
Oh.
It's virgin.
All right. Well.
And that just tastes like Christmas. Mm.
So is Southern Comfort eggnog the pinnacle of eggnog?
In my estimation, yes, it is. I consider myself an eggnog connoisseur. Yeah. I have tried many different variations and brands. And I stumbled upon Southern Comfort several years ago now. And it was love at first sip. It's like everything culminated into all of my life experiences. And all of the different eggnogs I encountered along the way was just in preparation for this one.
See, the idea of having egg in a drink, it never made sense to me. That's why eggnog was never at the top of my list of things to, like, throw myself into. Even, like, you guys know when you go, like, to the snowball stand in the summer and there's the flavor egg custard? I'm like...
That always weirded me out, too.
Same thing, that same feeling you get when you're weirded out by egg custard, I get with eggnog. And I feel like nog is even a more weirding out word than custard.
I know, but
both are
just
not
the words
ideal.
Egg and nog together have, they're just kind of synonymous with joy for me now. Mm. It's not weird.
Mm. That's delicious.
Carolina, how's your day? Tell us about your day.
My day has been good. Just got a few more things added to the to-do list, but that's
really
normal. Yeah.
You know, when it becomes too much on the to-do list, that's when you do nothing.
That yeah. You just
that would explain a lot about my life.
Okay. You just crumple that to-do list up. And
are you like in the military? You've done more before 8 a.m. than most people have done their whole day. Is that?
How early does your day start?
Typically about 6 a.m.
Okay. Alarm clock or no alarm clock?
Alarm clock.
Okay.
Definitely alarm clock.
You're like,
yeah.
I need it.
Sometimes I'll set it at 5:45 just so I can get up around 6. Mm-hmm. That's typically when I wake up my son, Gabriel. He doesn't get up right away, but I'll snuggle.
You got to start on him first?
Yeah, because he leaves. He gets on the bus. 7:08, the bus comes for him. So about 7 o'clock, he's got to be out the
door.
That's
early.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
So he starts getting ready. I make his lunch, breakfast. Mm-hmm. He eats. He leaves. then I typically like do something in the kitchen, like empty the dishwasher or put dishes in, because there could be a pile from the night before, I'm just saying.
Yeah, true.
And then it's waking up the girls and getting them ready and making their lunches and breakfast. And they leave, the bus comes for them at 9 o'clock. So really those first 3 hours of my day, mm-hmm. it's just getting kids out the door.
Yeah. Somebody told me that, or just through listening to the Tim Ferriss podcast, they say every good leader has a morning routine that the first hour of their day looks exactly the same every day to maximize it, right? You don't really make any decisions. You just wake up and you go through the exact same routine every day. And for me, if any of that routine is not going to involve getting Reese ready, I have to wake up an hour before her. And that's like, I have to wake up at 5:30 then. Like, she gets up at 6:30, like clockwork. No alarm. She's just on fire at 6:30. So.
Yeah, no, my kids have always been late sleepers. But I think that's because I would get them to bed really late, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. That's a night owl family. Take them out partying.
Well, it just seems like when Gabriel was little, you know, his being the firstborn, we were involved in life group or other things, and everything just ended later. So if I wanted to be involved with something, I had to be okay with them staying up late.
Yep.
So that's what it was.
That's awesome. And I feel like the bigger the family gets, the more the younger kids just have to adjust to what the rest of the family is doing. Yeah. Like, I'm the youngest of five, right? So I didn't have... Nothing revolved around me. They're like, they just come along, whatever
right,
we're doing.
Exactly.
Just, yeah. So. Yeah.
That's cool. Dave, I see you.
Thanks, Dante. I appreciate that. So, Carolina, I also see you. And so I brought you some snacks. So Carolina
snacks.
And I were...
These Carolina, are the best.
Yeah. So Carolina and I were in a leadership seminar thing, and there's candy all over the place, but the two of us couldn't stop eating caramel M&Ms.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep. And we had this, like, hour-long, maybe, back-and-forth text conversation. Yeah.
We should have been focusing on the speaker.
But you were focused on the M&Ms?
See, I feel like that's the speaker's fault. If the speaker can't compete against caramel M&Ms, then...
There's something wrong with the speech.
Yeah, the speaker's fault.
Yeah, that was a great day.
Yeah.
Candy. You know how I used to plow through candy as a kid? Now? Can't do it.
Tummy ache.
Yeah, immediate. Tummy just starts rumbling. Teeth are all sore.
Mm-hmm.
I want to, do you guys know much about, like, veneers and, like, has the world of...
Tooth veneers?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because in refinishing pianos, my previous career track, veneer is also the layer of wood that's on top of, you know, whatever the wood is that the piano is built out of.
Okay, so teeth.
Teeth veneer. Got it.
Or has the denture industry, have they, like, crossed the line and are they cool now? Legit now?
Well, we're definitely way past, like, wooden dentures of George Washington, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Have they made, like, have they been revolutionized their market? Have they innovated some stuff?
I don't know. The only thing I know about dentures is I remember, like, my grandparents, right? They would have the dentures and they would have to put, like, the strips, like the sticky strips in there.
The poly grip.
Poly grip, yes. And then they would consistently fall out. So
they'd fall out, right. That's the thing. See, the reason I'm asking is because I want to, like...
You need dentures?
I want to do something here. I met this guy in Kenya who had, like, most of the bottom row of his teeth, it was, like... it was either white gold or silver. I don't know what metal it was, but he had it all done.
Wait, you want metal teeth?
Time out. I understand at first glance or at first hearing that sounds tacky, right? But he wore it in such a way, it looked distinguished and I know what you're thinking. Like, that can never look presentable. But he just, it worked. It just worked. And I was like, what if I got my grill done?
Yeah.
On the bottom.
Mm-hmm. But was his for, like, a reason? Or is he just, like, a style?
That's the thing. I don't know.
Is he just classy?
It could be either or. That's what blew my mind about it. Because I was like, oh, like, did he rot his teeth out? And he had to get silver, like.
That's the really.
But he didn't seem like the type to rot his teeth out.
Who does elective dental work?
That's the thing.
Nobody.
It looked elective.
Artists
it looked
do that.
Elective.
Nowadays, like, I feel like it's very trendy in certain circles.
My question to you two is there a way to do it without it looking tacky? Like, can I still look professional with some grills? Like professional grills?
Only if you get a matching face tattoo, I think. Then
you're making it harder now.
No, if you can pull off grills, then you also can pull off a face tattoo and still look classy. Just I think they are in the same genre of work to be done.
Just imagine this whole bottom row being silver, and then like me being clean cut, shaved, suit on, giving the speech. Like, what would you think? I need your input more at this point. You're a woman who is attracted to men, right? You're a heterosexual woman.
I am.
So what would that, what kind of
impression
would that have on you as a woman looking at a guy?
I am very traditional.
Not that this matters. Okay, never mind.
I understand. I am very traditional and conservative in my look.
Okay. In your look or your preference?
In my look and what appeals to me.
To you, okay.
Because of my personality. I may think it looks okay on that person if they actually pull it off, like you're saying. Because otherwise it would just look tacky to me. Mm-hmm. But then my next thought would be, why would anyone do that? Like, even that choice of color. Like, maybe if you had to have dental work done, like, if I needed dental work done, I want it to look natural.
Blend in. Yep.
But I'm more traditional in that sense. I'm not...
Here's my analysis.
That's a thin line, Carolina, because now, I mean, you got to hold that up consistently with other areas of your style, too. I'm sure where you're from... I don't know where that is, but wherever you're from, not all women might dress like you. You know, they might think that you dress untraditional.
Well,
you like to wear heels a lot.
I love heels.
You know what I'm saying?
I like to look very feminine.
My question is there's a line. There's a distinct line, right? And it's arbitrary. It's different for everyone.
True.
With the silver teeth, can it get to a point at some point throughout our human history, can it arrive at a place where it's like, that looks distinguished? That's a sign of wealth and maturity and put-togetherness. Could that happen?
I think at some point in our future cultural development, anything's possible. I mean, people wear ridiculous things and we don't know why. Like, we don't know why a collar... Like, why is a collar dressed up? It doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make sense at all.
Commonly known now, if you wear a collar, you're dressing up a little bit. So I can't say anything about future. What I would love to point out is that I think each of us makes fashion choices based on elements that will not overpower our personality. Mm. So... if you are the type of person where grills would not overpower your personality, then you've got to have a pretty big personality.
Me, I see.
Look at me, I'm dressed like the Blue Power Ranger. Like, he was the dorkiest of all the Power Rangers, right? Blue shirt, blue, like. So, personality-wise, I'm not taking any risks here. Because no chance my form of dress, my fashion choices are overpowering my personality. So I think you can judge somebody's personality by how risky they are in their fashion choices.
Wouldn't that be a cool thing to juxtapose, though? Like, if I got grills, right? And then, but I was just, I even went the other end of the spectrum. I, like, overcompensated in how I articulated myself, like, how I expressed myself, and, you know what I mean? To, like, just trying even harder to be well-spoken. Wouldn't that be kind of a trippy thing for people to witness, like somebody...
See, but I'm not saying that the grills would make me think that you'd be uneducated or not well-spoken. I would say the grills would tell me that this is a person who...
Who's got a larger-than-life personality.
Larger-than-life.
I see what you're saying. So, see, I mean, growing up in Baltimore City, like when we got to high school age, all the guys... We're getting fronts. You know, they go to the mall, get fitted for their fronts, and it was part of the style, the fashion. And, like, guys that had fronts were cooler looking, got more girls, and that's how it was.
And I just so think that's not because of the fronts. That's because of the personality that can handle the fronts.
Dave, that's...
I think it's a combination of
that's
both.
A great diplomatic approach.
I think you have a valid point, and it makes sense.
It's a great point. They would have been popular among the ladies without the fronts, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's true. But I think it's also it's a style that's subjective to time, to generation, and like you said, where's cultural evolving, evolving to. I think, yes, and in the future that could be seen as something really cool and like, yeah, I want to get fronts or grills or whatever.
Okay, so what I really want to do is, I really want to do veneers though, like my whole mouth. Is that expensive?
Probably would be.
Is it? Yeah. Do they file your teeth down and then cap them off? Is that what they do?
Whoa. That's intense.
Yeah.
You can never go back at that point.
No.
That's a lot of maintenance.
Is it?
Right?
There's a lot of maintenance and a lot of just risk for the rest of your life. That could end up being a lot of money.
What do you mean? Like if I lose a tooth?
Yeah. Or what if there's a lot of trauma that you incur on your teeth just by filing them down? What if it cracks? What if you get an infection? What if it causes a root canal? And what if you end up losing that tooth and then you need to get an implant? Like,
I think
a lot of money.
I think that this is actually more hygienic. I think it's healthier for you, actually.
I don't know about that.
I would speak to a professional. But.
And like if you chip a tooth, you'd go through the same
hurdles if you have no choice. Tooth. Like if you need work done, then you get work done. But to choose to do it.
I'll talk to a professional and I'll circle back. We've got something more interesting here.
Where we're going right now is a nice little quiz segment. Every now and then, when we have a guest on the show, yes. We like to take one aspect of their life.
Dave does his extensive research on our guests.
Yes. Oh, gosh. I'm not liking this. Okay.
Some historical, touch point for that person to just see how much they remember, really.
Probably not much.
Significant moments in our life. So... as we've maybe already mentioned, you are from what city?
Where I grew up?
Mm-hmm.
Toronto.
Toronto.
No, not Toronto. Toronto.
I was just about to use me? I was just Hold about on, to comment me, on this. Yeah. Okay, you mispronounced that.
Currently looking at a spelling of Toronto.
You got the phonetics?
Mm-hmm.
And there is a T right before the O.
Hard T.
Hard T. Toronto.
I know.
That's a hard T there. That's not a...
Can you please school us out? I mean,
is that how is that how Torontonians say it? Is that
no, Torontonians just say Toronto.
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 Okay.
Well, actually, the newer generation might say T.O. Toronto, Ontario.
We're not ready for that yet.
I know.
We're not that cool.
Look at them getting all hip.
At least maybe that's when I was there 14, 15 years ago. Yeah, T.O.
Way cooler than us.
All right. I'll put that on my list of things to remember next time I meet somebody from T.O.
Oh, when's the last time you've been to T.O.?
They'll be impressed. I'm like, how'd you know T.O. that? Uh-huh.
So what we have here is a little quiz of Toronto
get it right.
facts.
Yes.
We just want to know how much you know about your hometown.
Mm-hmm. Probably right? Not much.
So,
but okay.
Dante, you have the questions. I've got the answers. And how about you ask the question, and if she needs the help of the multiple choice,
then give her the multiple choice.
You can give her the multiple choice.
All right, you ready?
No. But all right, let's go.
Which of these is one suggestion of the meaning of the name Toronto? Which of these is one suggestion of the meaning of the name Toronto? Is it meeting place? Is it water's edge? Is it Blue Bay or Longview? Suggestion of the meaning of the name Toronto.
Say them one more time.
Oh boy. Meeting place, water's edge, Blue Bay, or Longview?
Water's edge.
Meeting Dave?
Place? Nice try.
She said two answers.
Meeting place.
It is one of those.
Situated on the banks of Lake Ontario, mm-hmm. and was populated as a dwelling by the Huron people well over 200 years ago. So, meeting place,
mm-hmm.
apparently.
And it was one of the first two.
You know, you get to learn about your homeland, yeah. and so do we. All right, here we go. What was the main use of the location known as Toronto when it was first settled by Europeans? Do you know? What was the main use when it was first settled? I can give you multiple choice if you want.
Yes, please.
Okay, was it a French fort, a fur trading post, an English fort, or a natural harbor?
Before hearing that, I was going to say some kind of trading post.
So fur trading post? Do you think?
I think it's very, very possible.
0-2. French fort is the answer.
What's the French fort? Do you know? Does it say in your research?
Well, let's keep going.
That's not the focus right now.
We're going to go on here.
You'd think they would have taught this
There
in
were three forts. The French erected three forts in the immediate area to protect the sovereign trade with the local Indian tribes.
Yes. Yes. Do you know French, Carolina?
I know a little bit of French.
Ooh, okay. The rest of the podcast in French. You ready?
Ça va. Très bien.
All right, that's it. That's all I got. All right, Toronto was known for a brief period as York. Okay? And what year did this change occur? Mm-hmm. 1799, 1795, 1793, or 1797.
You have to be a really good historian to know.
Dave, what kind of quiz is this,
man? I think I'm just going to eat my M&Ms.
Okay, 1793 was the correct answer. Good job. All right.
Okay, what is... Toronto is the origin of the longest road in the world. What is the name of the road? Come on.
The highway? Highway 401, Queen Elizabeth?
No.
401, that's...
It's not a highway. It's a road, Carolina.
But that's
the longest road.
It doesn't count.
The longest road.
It's the origin of the longest road.
The longest road in the world.
1,900 kilometers. It stretches from the edge of Lake Ontario all the way up past Lake Superior.
You want multiple choice?
Yeah.
Okay. York Street. I don't even know how to say this. Yonge.
Y-O. Young Street.
Don't be condescending. You're the one that needs the multiple choice.
I know.
What does that say?
Dundas and Loyalist. And you said it goes from where? From the edge?
Yeah. The edge of Lake Ontario all the way up past Lake Superior.
Young, this, I know, goes north.
How long did you live in Toronto?
North, south.
There it is. Young. Great job.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, Young Street. I didn't realize it went that high, though.
Ding, ding, ding.
You want to look through these and see if there's one question remaining that might be worth...
Underground... Well, it looks like a subway. What's the underground passage system that links much of the business core of downtown Toronto?
TTC. The Rocket. The... the subway, it's called the public transportation is TTC. Toronto Transit Commission.
The path? What do you know about the path? That's what it says the answer is. Clearly,
Wait, the path, like the...
The path is what they say the answer is.
Toronto Underground.
You gotta understand, the corridor. Carolina, we don't know anything about Toronto. Oh, so
I thought it meant like the transportation, like
yeah,
because that's all underground. Well, yeah.
I would think so too.
What there, ethnicity there in
is,
Toronto?
I guess this is what it's talking about. There is like this underground world that honestly I have never been there. Because well, I grew glad. Up in the
she was high
outskirts.
Class. Yeah.
No. It's
we
because
don't want you involved in the
she grew up on
world.
An estate.
No. It's like stores and the market and stuff, but mm-hmm. it's under. Yeah. And I've heard about it, but I've never been there.
What
to
ethnicity
be honest.
In Toronto is the largest one outside of its original country? Greek, Filipino, German, or Italian?
It's between either Greek or Italian.
Ding ding ding! Italian. You got it.
Dave just gave you a couple of those answers.
Well,
can I ask so a question,
really,
though?
You really went 0 for 6, to be fair.
Yeah.
How current is this? Like, do you know if this is more of current data?
I don't know. If you Google... If you
this
go,
was Googled today,
yeah,
so...
If you Google Toronto quiz, this will be the first one that comes up.
Interesting.
So...
In my defense, I've been gone 14 years.
Well, in your defense as well, Dante and I have no clue what we're talking about.
But I learned something today, so there you go.
Well, average score for this quiz is 7 out of 15, so a little under 50%.
So either people don't know about Toronto or the quiz is wrong.
Caroline, I don't think you had your ear to the streets when you were there.
Or it's the kind of question. It's like...
Yeah. It's a flawed quiz,
yeah.
Carolina. Agreed, 100%.
Don't downplay the quiz because you didn't get the answer.
No, I'm like, I wish you would have asked me some of these other ones.
Yeah. It's not you, it's the quiz.
It's our fault.
It's my fault.
We asked the wrong question.
No,
we
did ask the wrong question. It's me. I just didn't know the answers to the questions you guys asked.
So you made it to Toronto via what route? Where were you? You said you grew up in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Were you born in Toronto?
No, I was one when my family arrived in Toronto.
Nice.
Through Toronto Pearson Airport.
Oh, man. And where did your family arrive from?
Argentina. Yeah.
And that was home to your parents?
Nope. My parents are from Chile,
All right.
Which is the neighboring country to Argentina. They left in the 70s, 76, in the midst of political turmoil. So they moved to Argentina, were there 3 years, and during that time is when I was born. Mm. And then ended up moving to Canada as refugees, actually, and didn't know anything about Canada, nothing about English to begin with, like not a single word. And my dad had been there for 3 months by the time my mom arrived with myself and my brothers. And that was it. Grew up there.
Wow. And then made your way to the States when?
September of 2004.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's pretty recent.
Dante, 2004 is a long time ago.
14 years ago.
It's pretty recent.
That is kind of
in relative terms.
Sure. Sure.
That's the year I graduated high school, Dave.
How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So you're from the world then. Like, it's not even like you... Do you find that a difficult question of, like, where are you from?
All the time, because I never know what to say. In my mind, I'm very much Hispanic, but I'm also... I've been told that by other people's standards, because I never really lived in Hispanic culture, that I'm not really a Hispanic. Like, I'm a Canadian that just knows Spanish. I'm like, that's not true. So there's this thing of like,
how is somebody going to say that to you? That
we'll just leave it there. It's been said.
All right.
But there's that idea of how much do you really know of a place firsthand to say I'm from there?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I look at the Olympics, I still get very like, oh, that's Canada. You know, it's a part of me gets proud of it. You know. Because I do identify with the Canadian culture as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where I grew up. That's what I know. That's what I've lived. But I haven't really lived, you know, in Chile or Argentina to say I know what the culture is like there. Like, I really don't. So
but your home culture was Chilean, right? When you walked into your house.
Yeah, Yeah, like
it was very different than what it was like outside of your house then. Would agree, disagree?
I would agree because of the language, because of the food my mom would make. But then there's a little bit of cross-culture in terms of being Christian. Like, my parents were very involved in church, so a whole lot of our identity in, at home wasn't just culture-specific. There was culture, but there was also, you know, the Christian culture mm-hmm. that blended. So it was a mix of stuff.
Did that tend to be a bridge between your home life and life in Canada? Like, the culture, Canadian culture and home culture, that a bridge in between the two was that faith community?
Yeah, I would say so. Because the church I grew up going to, or always, whatever church, was always a Spanish-speaking church. Hmm. And Toronto being very multicultural, like, there was people from many Hispanic countries. Like, it wasn't just Chile or South America. So I was exposed to different Latin American cultures within the church. And then at school, there's people from all over the place. Like, as our quiz said, like, there's people from, you know, Trinidad, Pakistan, Lebanon, Italian, Greek, like, everything's mm-hmm. Jamaica. So there was always a sense of, like, everyone has their own culture, but we're all still here together. Like, it never felt like there was only Canadian culture and then only Chilean culture in this case for me.
Huh. That's wild.
And church was just part of that Latin American culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I never really grew up with that distinction. I think that's one of the things that I noticed most when I moved here to the States, that there was more of a distinction than I... Like, people are more conscious about it. So, that was different for me.
People are more conscious about it here in the States, you mean?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. So, that's really interesting, because I feel like it's hard to imagine where you're from, or that question isn't, like, a primary, like, identifier, you know? So, to be in the Canadian culture that you grew up in, where everybody was from a different place no matter what, and when mm-hmm. you kind of, there was an inherent sense of unity even in the midst of the diversity of that.
Yeah.
But here, the lines are drawn, at least from my perspective, pretty distinctly of communities stick to themselves a lot, even when it's a multicultural community
yeah.
like this. Mm-hmm. So you made it here to the States, and when did getting married kind of fall into all that? Were you already married when you came to the States, or did you get married after you got here?
I got married and a week later moved here.
Okay, nice.
So I met my husband in Toronto, actually. He's from Guatemala.
What was he doing in Toronto?
He had gone to college in Toronto.
Ah.
So his stepdad was, because he's retired now, but at the time worked for the Canadian government. So they were stationed in different parts of the world. So his mom met the stepdad when Marcus was about 12, 13-ish. Mm-hmm. They got married, and then immediately they went to Senegal, Dakar, and lived there for a while. Marcus did his high school 4 years in Chile, actually. And he likes to remind me.
No way. He's more Chilean than you are.
Yes. He humbly reminds me that he probably knows more about living there.
Let's call him. Get him on the line.
Came time for college, it was easier for him to go to Canada to study, because by then they were Canadian citizens through his stepdad. And so he ended up going to college in Toronto with his brother, and they went to college, and it really wasn't until after that that him and I met through a friend, common friend, and he was one of the sons of my pastor from my church. Mm. They were from Venezuela. So anyways, they would play baseball, and this guy would always invite him, like, oh, you should come to church, you should come to church. Marcus was in a completely different lifestyle than mine. He wasn't a Christian. Eventually, long story short, became a Christian, started going to church. We just became friends through youth group and doing stuff. And yeah, then he got a job here, actually, in 2000.
Nice.
And we were long distance for a while.
Oh. And then, you guys kept in touch.
Yeah. We were supposed to get married 2 years before when we actually did, and in 2002. And
guys hit a rough patch?
You could say that.
A detour.
Yeah.
The scenic route.
Yeah. And
all up in your business?
Well, I don't mind sharing. Like, I'm the one that called it off, actually.
Oh, you left him at the altar?
not quite, but it was on his birthday weekend. So,
oh, my goodness. I know. Wait a week?
Wow.
Well.
Why couldn't you
wait? When you know, Dante.
Well, I had come to visit. Mm-hmm. And
for his birthday?
For his birthday, but there was just stuff.
While you were here, you broke it up?
Well, would you rather over the phone? Yeah.
I guess.
Right? Yeah, so it's just.
What emoji combination would really communicate that we're done?
This is AOL Instant Messenger days now. Right. 2002.
Yeah, there was no emojis back then. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so long story short, we ended up getting back together and got married in 2004. I had just turned 26 and moved here, left everything. Moved here.
Wow.
You guys got married in Toronto.
Yeah.
That's wild. And so you didn't really know anybody in this area?
I had met a few people from the church we used to go to. We used to go to a small Hispanic church. I had met some people from when I had visited, but I didn't have close friendships. I didn't, yeah. And he didn't have family here either. So it was just us.
So when y'all started having kids, your life kind of just became really centered around being mom.
Yeah. And we had 3 kids in 3.5 years. Whoa. So there was a lot of demand.
Three kids in 3.5 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. What year did you guys start having kids?
2006.
Okay, so you were married for like 2 years.
Yeah, I was married about a year and a half when I got pregnant with Gabriel. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's wild. Julie and I, you know, were married for 7 years before we started trying, like, well, before we started not trying. Yeah. Before we pulled the goalie. And when we, like, but, you know, for us, we had fertility issues that pushed it back even further. So we didn't have Reese until almost 10 years into our marriage, and she's our only one. So your experience of being married for a couple years, having 3 kids back to back, mm-hmm. that had to have been a pretty big life-defining, controlling, like, almost takeover. Yeah?
Yeah, it was. But I had always wanted to be a mom. Like, that was, like, a big thing for me. So I was, like, I'm happy. I'm loving this. Yeah. The demand was huge. Yeah. You know, you never really know what it's like until you're living it, right? But yeah. I was fine with it. And I had good pregnancies, so that helped. Mm-hmm. And
You must have had good pregnancies.
Yeah, or else I wouldn't have done it again.
Not that soon.
Yeah, no, I was blessed in that regard. Yeah. So I really enjoyed that. I really liked it. Mm-hmm. And just the whole motherhood experience was, for me, has been beautiful.
Would love to talk about that a little bit. So what is it like, what was your decision like to, moms have to make really hard decisions about whether or not they continue with a career outside the home, if they take some time away from that, if they spend time in the home. You didn't have much family or support system close by. Kind of talk us through a little bit of that that decision process and what it meant to you.
Well, for me, to be honest, it was an easy decision because being Canadian here, I couldn't work. I still can't. I don't have the required paperwork. So it worked out. I think had I been given the choice, I would have liked to stay home anyways. But I am very much a people person, and I did have to supply that need to have some kind of company other than babies. That's, I think, was the hardest part for me. But staying home with the kids, like, it was an easy choice. Like, I think I would have done it anyways, just because it's just amazing for me.
That's awesome. Being alone with kids all the time without a big support network, how did you find people? Like, how did you, since you are such a people person,
yeah,
what did that look like for you?
So I was lucky to have gotten into a really good life group. I started coming to Bridgeway in, I think, July of 2006. I was about 5 months pregnant, and my son was born in November. About a month before that, I met Paul and Margarita Cabellion at a golf tournament. I wasn't golfing. My husband was, I'm not a golfer. But my husband was, and he said, oh, why don't you come join us for lunch afterwards? So around what I figured would be lunchtime, I went, and I was just standing by the door because they hadn't come back yet, and I was just pregnant me, standing by this door by myself, mm-hmm. and Margarita walks up to me, and she's like, oh, hi, how are you? I'm so-and-so, introduced herself, and she invited me to her table. And at her table is where I met her husband, and Dr. Anderson was actually at that table as well. So there was like a core group of people from church, and they invited us to their life group, which is like a home group. And I was the only one pregnant. There's a lot of young couples, but no kids. Nobody had kids. And Gabriel was the first. And we continued going. Once he was born, we started going to life group still with Gabriel. And he was like the nephew. Everyone would hold him. And they became family to me.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, is that a easy thing for moms, like, to find people that they can be themselves around? Like, when you are raising kids and you're trying to keep some sort of, like, people-to-people connection, was that difficult to, like, let people into sometimes the craziness that is a family, you know, with young kids?
Yeah, I think you have to be intentional about it. There are resources, there are ways of connecting, but you have to be intentional and go out. They're not going to come to you at your door and say, here I am.
That can be exhausting, though. Like, you're already tired. You're, like, that's thrown on you, too. Like, oh, in the midst of trying to keep this family alive, mm-hmm. go out and find some friends, too. You know, like, yeah. when... It just seems like
even the relationships that you already have, it takes work to even sustain those that I've been discovering as a new parent for the last couple of years now. It's like, as crazy as it is, I have to schedule times to... you know, even visit my parents and, like, you know, friends that I have. It's like, mm-hmm. all right, we got to get stuff on the calendar. Otherwise, it's so easy to let a week go by. A week flies by, and then a month is gone. And then, like, you know, you see somebody, you're like, was the last time I saw you last year?
Yeah.
It happens a lot.
Well, I think that's why Life Group worked for me, because it was a weekly thing. Like, everyone would come at that time. So it was easier to maintain that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if it's not something that is a reoccurring event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not anything like malicious or done on purpose. It's just like the other stuff comes up. It's consuming.
Your whole life revolves around the house, right?
Yeah.
And unless you're inviting people into your house and they're flexible or free enough to do that, or if they're asking or if they're pursuing and they're like, hey, can I come over? Like, you just can stay very insulated.
Well,
yeah.
Being home, I was able to plug into a mom's group.
Mm-hmm.
So we would meet, like, twice a month on a Thursday morning, and we'd either rotate different homes or we'd go to our park or whatever, but it's moms bringing their kids. So we're all on the same page. Mm-hmm. We're all a mess. And it would give us a chance to have adult conversations or even share some of our struggles. Mm-hmm. But we're all comfortable with the kid that doesn't stop crying because for whatever reason, or, you know, like one's yeah. mom's nursing while the other one's chasing after her kid yep. going down the slide. Like, I mean,
you're used to it.
We're all on the same page. It's a very comfortable and welcoming place to be where you can just be you. So for me, that was huge.
Mm-hmm. See, but that involves letting people into your met, like being okay with people seeing the crazy, the unpredictable, the mm-hmm. times when you don't put yourself together and you do have the kid that's acting up this time. And
I think it helps when you have other people that are like in the same boat going through the same stuff.
It starts with one person being authentic. Mm. Because when one person just lays it all out there, the person beside you that was kind of like, I don't know if I should say there, feel like, oh, I can say this and it's okay.
Yeah.
And then the next person. And so, and then you all realize you're not different from each other. Mm-hmm. So.
Did you have any stay-at-home dads in that group? Or was it just all ladies?
No. It was all...
Get left out.
It was all women.
And when, you know, we have Mondays off, and so all through Reese's baby years, Reese and I would spend the whole day together on Mondays, and there weren't any options for dads to connect with other dads with their babies. Because on Monday mornings, afternoons, traditionally, typically, the dads are off at work, and if there's anybody that's staying home, it's moms.
Right.
So.
Well, sometimes you would go to places like the Woodlawn Library that had, I don't know if you've ever been there, but they have this little
story
time. Yeah, stories. Yeah.
I know all about the Woodlawn Library.
So sometimes we'd go places and we'd see dads with their kids, and of course all the moms are like, oh, look at that, you know, mm-hmm. because it was so heartwarming. You don't see the dads very often with the kids, and that's like very heartwarming for as a mom to see that. And it is.
How old are your kids now?
12, 10, and 8.
All right, so a little older.
A little older.
Made it over some significant mountains there.
Yeah. 12, 10, and 8. And so I know you mentioned earlier about your work status and how you actually don't have the necessary paperwork to legally work and mm-hmm. do stuff. Your kids being older now, is that something that you are, is there anything you're dreaming of in terms of like a career or out of the house ventures, or like what are you kind of thinking and dreaming about these days?
For me, it's been, I'm on this journey because haven't arrived yet, but I'm on this journey of figuring out who I really am. I grew up in a conservative home. I lived with my parents up until the day I was married. I was working full-time at the time, but still at home. Mm-hmm. You know, had some financial independence, but not entirely. Then I got married and depended completely on my husband. So now it's almost like, who am I as an adult? Mm-hmm. My 30s was hugely defined by being mom, stay-at-home mom, and I'm still mom, and the kids still need me, but not to the same degree. So now there's this room for figuring out who I am and what am I going to do with the rest of my life. Because eventually, obviously, they're going to leave, go off to college or do whatever they're going to do and become independent adults. So I'm just in that place of figuring out, who am I?
Did that sneak up on you, or did you see it coming?
I feel like I did see it coming. Or I'd get hints of it, but never really. It's like when you see something out of the corner of your eye and you kind of know it's there, but you never stop to really look at it. Mm-hmm. And I recently turned 40, and I think that just that number just made me get much more reflective too. like, I'm 40 and what have I done with my life? Where am I going to, I'm still young enough where I can do something significant. What's that going to be? And, you know, it's making decisions and choices of, that have long-term effects, right? So I want to use my time wisely because I'm not young anymore, you know, and I am young, but you're I'm not, young. But not by those, like, you know, a 20-year-old still mm-hmm. has a whole lot of, you know, I feel like at this time I start need to really, you know, hone in on what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if most people work until they're like 65, 25 years is a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, you can accomplish a lot and you can, like, you can not, it's not like whatever your first decision is here out of the gates at 40 will necessarily be what you have to stick with the whole time. You can take a step in and grow and learn more and follow a winding path even. There's a lot of life left to live. So, yeah, that's, I think you even said this, like, before, when you have young kids and you're defined by, like, the urgency of being constant mom mode, and then there's empty nester that's still another 15 years off, but there's this in-between time where it's less urgent. There's less required of you. There's just less, so what do you do?
Right. Like, you can't just pack up and leave and say, I'm going to go discover the world, because your kids still need you, and they're in school, or even if you took them out of school and homeschooled, well, who's going to homeschool them? Like, it still demands of me. Mm-hmm. So I can't just pick up and go, but there's wiggle room for me to develop who I am. Mm-hmm. But it's now like, yeah.
Do you feel like anybody's talking about this? Like,
no. At least not that I've encountered.
Yeah.
I think it's something that might be more predominant in moms that stay home as opposed to have a career at the same time, mm-hmm. like working moms, which is incredible as well. Like, I don't know how they do it. I feel... I hear a lot of debate of what's better, to stay at home with your kids and give up your career, or, you know, have your career and pay for someone to take care of your kids. Like, I don't think there's the better option. It's whatever works for you. But for the moms that do stay home, I think it's something that they might struggle with. I haven't necessarily heard it. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not talked about that much, but I can see it happening, because I know there's that common struggle of being valued. I feel that moms that stay home don't feel quite as valued because they're not making a dollar figure amount.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's really difficult, because it's almost like the possibilities are endless in how you could be spending your time, right? You can do whatever you want, but there are constraints on your time, that it's between the window of 9:30 and 2:30,
right,
you know, every day, which is a significant time when your kids are at school, so much more freedom. But what options are there for that specific window? It seems like it's a very unique challenge.
Right. Like, it's not just you only have so many hours. It's got to be within these hours. Uh-huh. Yeah. So there's like part-time things I'm sure moms could apply for. It usually tends to be retail jobs, from what I hear from my other friends, that, you know, because those hours are more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Career-wise, I don't see it happening. It's either you have the career or you don't, or you manage to work from home. That's becoming more common nowadays too, uh-huh. which could work. For me, not being able to work fully with a social security number, I have done lots of things since I moved here, but they've all been cash jobs here and there. I do individual piano lessons for kids, mm-hmm. so I can tailor my own schedule based. It's usually in the evening when other kids are home, mm-hmm. and my husband's home with the kids.
But it seems like this isn't just like, what should I be doing? It's identity. It's like, who
exactly. am I when it's the kids are It's stuff that like, I can do.
Yeah.
Out of all of that, the one that I love the most is piano. And actually, I do kind of like an Uber service for family. I pick up kids after high school and I take them home.
Nice.
But I have a lot of conversations with the girl. She's 15 years old. And I've been working with the family about 3 years. So we've established kind of like a friendship. But it's those people relationships. It's building into her. And I feel the same with my piano students. Like, it's more than just the subject at hand. It's daily conversations. It's advice and bigger perspectives than that, what they might have where they're at now. And I just feel like it's an opportunity to build into them. And that's what I love.
And that's value. Like, it's not the paycheck value, but there's something incredibly valuable in that moment that you're giving and receiving even without the exchange of the dollar bill.
Right.
So I wonder, like, I wonder how much identity is connected with value, like that we really find our identity in the things that bring value to us, but also the value that we can instill in the people around us.
Yeah. I think that hits it on the head for me. I feel like even as somebody that is in full-time ministry, and, you know, I have a full-time job. Much of what I do involves other people. That's all it does is involve other people, you know. I'm playing my part to further the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ in a creative way. However, I feel like anything I do outside of the house pales in comparison to what I could and will ultimately accomplished by raising a good human being that is kind, that is compassionate, that loves people, that loves herself. I feel like, and I've said this in many different settings and in many different mediums, but I wholeheartedly believe with every ounce of my being that the greatest thing I'll ever do is be Lily's father. Like, I'm not going to do anything greater than that, because I feel like whatever we have as parents, we have this unique opportunity to impart and impress upon our young people, our young kids, the best parts of ourselves. Inevitably, they're going to obviously pick up the shrapnel of the bad stuff, the things that are, you know, not so good sides about ourselves, but we can be intentional and we can be we can be more direct with what those redeeming qualities of ourselves and what those redeeming qualities of our world are as we build into, you know, our children. And I think that, you know, I think that if my wife and I can raise this girl to be a world changer and to, you know, love God and love people, then I don't, you know, I think that's the greatest thing you can do.
Man.
Because think about if everybody did that, you know?
What I'm like, just to connect the two, it's like your, Carolina, your life inside the home is of, like Dante was saying, the most extreme value we can exchange, right? Giving and receiving from our kids and raising, like, these wonderful, like, human beings who have a whole future ahead of them, and you are their main influencer in that. And now you have these moments in time that are free that you're like, where else can I give value and receive value? And what you get to compare it to is the most valuable experience that anybody could, that many of us, I don't want to say any of us, because there are a number of people who aren't parents and they have other things that bring extreme value into their lives and they get to, but for the life of a parent, there's just so much value found in that. So that's got to be difficult in this next pursuit is will anything feel as valuable as what you've been doing inside the home? Or is anything else that you pursue in these next stages, you'd be like, man, this doesn't feel as valuable as what I was doing in the home. Does that make any sense?
It makes sense, but I think they're different. Because the value that you have in the home, it's like Dante said, you're raising these kids, you're building character, building, instilling values, and getting them ready for the world that lies ahead of them, and you want them to have a heart for God and love people and all of that stuff. But there is an exchange. As a parent, you do find joy in that. When you see their accomplishments, that makes you fill up with joy and like, wow, that's my child. But the parent-child relationship, at least what I've experienced till now, is mostly about giving. You're giving of yourself to raise them. And that's awesome. I wouldn't change that. Like I said, I've always wanted to be a mom, and it's a lot tougher than what you imagine, because there's just no way of knowing until you go through it. But I don't regret it at all. But the me finding my identity now, it's about me getting poured into. And I'm going to get poured into by something that I can be passionate about, or just live out. Like, I want to do all these great things, but if I can't do them, that's not really going to pour into me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they're separate. As a parent and raising kids, you're pouring into them, and that's super valuable. You can't take that away. But the other value of, I've been created with gifts and talents, and you find purpose in using them. But until you don't use them, you don't know what that feels like. And that's the value. Yeah. So I think when you become empty nesters, you don't forget about your kids, but they're independent now, and they're always just a phone call away if they're not in the immediate area. But they don't depend on you for everyday life. And like, you've done what you have been able to do, and now they're out to do, make their own decisions and live their own life. And as an empty nester, you're like, okay, now I'm going to live my life. I'm going to make my decisions, go where I want to go, or do what I need to do, or whatever. But it's this in-between time where it's like, I don't want to get to be an empty nester and have no sense of direction. So it's like, who am I now? So it's that middle ground.
That's awesome.
Are you enjoying figuring that out?
I am. It's also frustrating because I'm like, I should know this by now, and I don't. It's kind of exciting. It's kind of scary. It takes me a while to arrive to decisions on my own anyways. Like, I'm very indecisive. I am. Like, if I go to a restaurant, I have to, like, read the menu, like, 20 times, and I'll be like, I don't know. So it is definitely a learning experience for me, to know me. And I realize I'm not the same me that I was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And it's just shedding light on all those areas of my life that maybe it's like an living in a mansion, and you've only gone into the same three doors, and then there's like 50 other doors that you never opened. And now you're starting to open those doors, like, oh, I forgot about that. Oh, I never even knew this door existed. It's like going into different parts of your life that just kind of forgot about.
If people who are listening to this podcast only listen to that explanation right there about the mansion, they get everything. Like, that's like, what a beautiful picture of that exploration of knowing, and the hope and the excitement of knowing that you have a mansion. Like, just that is a declaration of like extreme belief in your own value and of what God can and will do with your life. And you get to explore through this. Like, what a really cool way to describe that.
And you said something stereotypical to me before we started recording. So now I'm going to say something stereotypical to you. Carolina, you can do whatever you put your mind to.
I believe it.
And that's the truth. Right now, this stage of your life, as an amazing mother that you are, and as you're thinking through, you know, what God would have for you in this season, I think it could be whatever it is you want. I think it's that's something to be excited about.
What do you think people who are in your similar, what would you like to say to people who are listening to this who are in a similar state as you? who are in that in-between area, not fully in a career, not an empty nester. It's this 40-year-old new self-exploration stage.
I would say don't be afraid to talk about just thoughts that you might have. There's nothing wrong with sharing what you're feeling. Maybe even go to someone who's older that may have already gone through that. I'd say it's never too late to start something new. I think I would just kind of, at this point, because I'm still on that journey, I'm still trying to figure it out, I'd just be there to listen, just to say, hey, I felt like I'd share my experience and say, this is what I feel, you know, and I've felt, and this is where I'm at, and I haven't figured it all out, but it's okay. And just kind of, like you said, there aren't a lot of groups for dads with kids. Well, I don't think there's a lot of groups for moms that are maybe going through these same experiences. Mm-hmm. So just kind of say I'm here.
That's awesome.
All right. Well said. Thank you. Well, this has been a great second episode. It's the only second episode of the second season we got. So
hey. One and only. Number.
Yep.
Thanks for sharing your story. Thanks for being willing to talk about something that most people never get a chance to talk about.
Because
I think those things are what we spend most of our time thinking about. And so getting a chance to bring it up to the surface is awesome.
Thanks
for that.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Do it, Dave.
Adios.
Adios.